Reporting on politics and public policy is supported by the Center for Western Studies at Augustana University.
Welcome to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. Last week, federal prosecutors released an indictment charging Paul Erickson with 11 counts of wire fraud and money laundering in connection with Compass Care, a South Dakota senior living company he founded in 1997. Erickson, a longtime Republican political operative, is the boyfriend of accused Russian agent Maria Butina. Rapid City Journal Enterprise reporter Seth Tupper has been following Erickson and his connection to Butina through a series of articles. You can find them at rapidcityjournal.com. And he joins us now from the Black Hills Surgical Hospital studio in SDPB's Rapid City studio. Seth, thanks for coming in.
Hey, thanks for having me.
All right, let's talk about the latest indictment news. Was this indictment a surprise, or we'd sort of seen the writing on the wall?
Well, we'd seen the writing on the wall. I think the only question was, was he going to be indicted for conspiracy with his Russian girlfriend in connection with her guilty plea to acting as an unregistered foreign agent? Or was he going to be indicted, for fraud in South Dakota, or possibly both? And we're still wondering if he'll face additional charges in Washington, D.C. in connection with the investigation into his girlfriend's activities out there.
All right, let's start with the indictment. And what do we know about it now? What are the details?
Well, basically, the indictment alleges that over a course of a couple decades, Paul Erickson jumped from one allegedly fraudulent scheme to the next. And one was Compass Care, which was, prosecutors say, was a scheme where he told investors that he was going to build and operate and manage assisted living centers, and he accumulated lots of contributions from people for that, and allegedly, apparently, just sort of pocketed that money. He went from that to other schemes, including Dignity LLC, investing with Dignity LLC, which was allegedly a company that was going to develop a specialized brand of wheelchair. And they also included charges that he had an unnamed venture in the Bakken oil fields in North Dakota, where he allegedly told people that he was had real estate and was going to develop single-family housing in the Bakken oil fields up there. And through all these schemes, the allegation in the indictment is that he would get people to invest money in these schemes up to a couple $100,000, and nothing would ever happen, and he would just basically keep the money.
So do none of these, does Compass Care exist at all? Does Investing with Dignity even exist? Was it, sort of shaving money off the side? Or was the whole thing a fraud and a sham?
Well, they exist on paper. Okay. Compass Care was a registered LLC. I believe so was Investing with Dignity LLC. And I actually, when I wrote a profile on Erickson last year, spoke to somebody who incorporated Compass Care with him. I forget the year that it happened. I believe it was back in the 90s. And so he had a partner at first, and it was, but those partners quickly left him. And so he did have the companies on paper, but I've never personally been able to find any other evidence of any existence of these companies actually doing anything other than they exist on paper and people gave money to them.
All right. So he's pretty good at doing this bad thing, which is convincing people to trust him and to give him money. In the indictment, those names are sort of just written by initials. But what do we know about some of the victims just from your reporting at this point?
Well, we don't, the indictment lists, I think, about 20 transactions in the wire fraud count, which are, checks or money wires that people gave to Paul Erickson. And the victims are only listed by initials. And so, I have some tips on who some of those people are. I don't have confirmation yet. But we do know from past lawsuits some of the people that have been allegedly stiffed by Paul Erickson. And those people don't actually match the initials in there, which leads me to believe, there are more people than just the victims in the indictment who have been angry at Paul Erickson after giving him money. But, for example, we know from past lawsuits, Brent Bozell is a frequent commentator on Fox News and a media critic. Back in the 90s in Virginia, he sued Paul Erickson after Bozell gave Erickson some checks. I believe it was $200,000 for Compass Care, and nothing happened, and he demanded his money back and never got it, and he had to sue. And became a long, drawn-out process. And then there were several other people over the years that sued for similar things.
Talk about this idea of, people are suing him, but yet this is the first time there's an indictment. You know, how does that work? Wouldn't the lawsuit sort of, be a catalyst for legal or for criminal action?
That is a great question. And when I did this long profile on Erickson about a year ago, that was something I continually asked and wondered is, how does this guy seemingly get away with all this alleged fraud and never get charged with anything criminal? And I don't know what the answer to that is, if he just sort of operated so far off the radar. And I do kind of wonder as well that some of the people that gave him money to invest are prominent people who perhaps were embarrassed that they gave him a lot of money and probably shouldn't have, and it was poor judgment on their part, and perhaps they were a little hesitant about coming forward or pressing charges. I'm not sure. Yeah. But for whatever reason, he was never criminally charged with anything that I could tell.
We spoke with someone on the show, I don't know, within the last month, I think maybe it was in January, who had lost all her money to Bernie Madoff, and spoke really about the wrote a whole book about that feeling of shame and, you know, people saying, what were you thinking? And just kind of unpacking that process of what went wrong. Tell me a little bit about how he sort of convinced these, influential, bright, financially viable people to part with their money. Let's talk about him as a person and his process.
Well, just, you know, on a personal level, he's been described to me and by people who know him as just somebody who, you know, has all these connections and is just sort of around all the time. That was a phrase that kept coming up. He's just sort of always around, and everybody especially in Republican circles in South Dakota seems to know who he is. Not that he was some big Republican power broker or anything like that, but he just seemed to know everybody. And he had a certain charisma, I guess, and a certain way about him he was able to convince people of certain things. And we also know from these lawsuits that over the years that in a couple of these lawsuits, there were exhibits entered, which were letters that he wrote to solicit money from people. And the two I found in separate lawsuits, one in Virginia and one in South Dakota, were basically identical letters as though it was a form letter that he was using. And he would promise enormous returns of, 100%, and he would personally guarantee that if the investment didn't make a profit, he would at least return your original investment. There would be language in the letters about this is this amazing opportunity that I'm limiting to family and friends only, and you're going to want to be the first to get in on this, et cetera. And so that was one of the methods that he used in at least a couple of cases that I was able to find through litigation, that he would send this letter, and then people would write him checks.
And he would say that he wanted to keep his friends and family. This idea, right, that I wouldn't offer this to you because we are close, I wouldn't risk our relationship with something that wasn't legitimate.
Right, and that was in the letters. And then, of course, I think the connections that he did have added a dimension to that, because he was somebody who, he had worked, helped run a Pat Buchanan presidential campaign. He was somebody that did know or have at least acquaintances with a lot of powerful people, and I think he could use that to impress people and sort of woo them into thinking that, this guy's a real mover and shaker, he knows a lot of people, and sort of win their trust that way.
And that sort of brings us to the tie-in with Maria Butina and their connections. What do we know about their relationship right now? And as far as, she's awaiting sentencing. She's already pled guilty to being a Russian agent, operating, I'm not sure exactly the terms, but not declaring herself as a Russian agent, essentially.
Correct, yep. She's in Washington, D.C., detained, and she's awaiting sentencing. And we don't know a whole lot. There's been a lot of reporting out there, even in Russia and also in the United States. I think they had been dating for about 5 years, is what the reporting indicates, when she was arrested last summer. And how exactly they met, I'm not sure, but we do know that, during the course of their relationship, she spent time in South Dakota, and she even spoke at the University of South Dakota. He apparently helped arrange that to a student group down there. She came out here to the Black Hills and spoke to the teenage Republicans, which he also helped arrange. And so that's sort of the odd part of this all, is that didn't appear to be hiding any of their activities. If she was, you know, really directed by Russian officials and trying to influence and infiltrate American organizations, she wasn't really hiding it. But the crime was she never registered as a foreign agent. There's lots of debate about, you know, was she really somebody who was going to do harm to the United States, or did she just kind of bumble her way into a criminal charge? And that's part of what makes the case interesting, I guess. And then, mm-hmm. of course, the fact that this young Russian gun rights activist hooked up with this interesting character, Paul Erickson, at South Dakota. It's just something you wouldn't have ever predicted, I guess. It makes it fascinating.
Do we see any indication that that she is a victim of his financial frauds at all? What do we see in the indictment? Anything yet? Are her initials in there, I guess, is what...
her initials...
I know that's super speculative, so obviously we don't know who the initials stand for.
Her initials are in there, but they're in the money laundering counts, which instead of her giving money to him, it's an indication that he... provided money to her in essence. And she was a student at American University out in D.C. And the money laundering count includes money that he paid to American University, we can assume, you know, on her behalf. And so she's caught up in it that way. You know, that's a really interesting question at this is who was allegedly duping whom in this right. case, you know, or were they both? And, you know, did she know that he had allegedly committed all of this fraud or not?
Right. So. And does he know what her ties are? What indications do we have that he knew? Obviously, he knows she's Russian. He knows her interest in the NRA and conservative groups. Does he know that she's working for Russia, that she's has connections directly to the Russian government, and to what end?
The indications of that are yes, in her case. There's been enough documents produced, and they don't refer to him by name, but of course they refer to this U.S. person one, who is Erickson, and they refer to him as a co-conspirator, and they've produced numerous documents and have said in court and that U.S. person one knew everything about Butina's activities and was a co-conspirator and a cooperator in that. Now, what she knew about his alleged fraudulent activities, we don't exactly know, but we do know that part of her plea agreement was that she would cooperate with prosecutors, and she did receive a letter from South Dakota prosecutors seeking her cooperation here. So apparently she may have learned or knew something about his business dealings.
Seth, can you articulate this argument that she just sort of bumbled her way into a criminal charge? What are people, when people are arguing, you know, like, hey, let's not get carried away about Maria Butina being a Russian agent, you know, what are they getting at there? What are they saying?
Well, there's a great piece out this week in the New Republic, if you Google that. I think it's titled The Spy That Wasn't. And the thesis of that piece is that, you know, look, she was just this, person from Russia who came to the United States to study and get a master's degree at American University, and she was, you know, coordinating with this Russian official, but she wasn't hiding anything, and that's clear. I mean, you can find her all over social media, and as I said, she was speaking at USD, and she was speaking at the Teenage Republicans of Black Hills, so she wasn't hiding anything. And so the thesis of that argument, I guess, is that she just was sort of naive and didn't realize that this was illegal activity. But at the same time, she wasn't trying to hide any of it. And some people have said that she's just kind of the fall guy for this, in this mood we're in now with the Mueller probe and Russian interference in elections, that if you have any attachment currently to the Russian government and trying to influence American politics, you're a lot more likely to be prosecuted right now, I guess, than maybe at some other time. And so that's kind of where that line of thinking originates, is that, she may not have had any actual real influence or power, but because of the times that we're in, she was sort of caught up in all this Russia fervor, which, you know, who knows? But that's one of the theories out there.
So the theory on the other side that there's something more insidious going on would be what exactly? Twofold,
well,
I'm guessing, at least.
That she has pleaded guilty. I mean, that's the problem with the counter-argument is, you know, she pleaded guilty and she's awaiting sentencing. And so she pleaded guilty to, coordinating with a pretty high-placed Russian official Alexander Torshin, who's had roles in the Russian government and connections to Putin, and acting at his direction, basically, to influence and infiltrate American interest groups, including the NRA. And so, you know, there is that side of it that, you know, she pleaded guilty and she did do these things. I guess the word the argument is, you know, did she actually have the power to do anything or
right.
or not?
So influence and infiltrate. So she's infiltrating because she's part of these meetings and these groups. And then what's the influence? Like, what are they, you know, the people who are, you know, say that there's a lot more happening here than meets the eye. She's not so innocent. What are they afraid that, I mean, are they talking about, you know, she's secretly sneaking in and grabbing data, you know, like she's in the room and therefore she's gathering, you know, secrets that people don't understand she's doing? Or is it just the fact that she's trying to, you know, divide America? Like what are they afraid of?
I think what prosecutors are alleging in her case is that basically at the direction of a pretty high placed Russian official, she was trying to, I guess, influence American politics, to be beneficial for Russia and to advance Russia's interests. You know, she had people connected with the NRA over in Russia. She came over here and had meetings with high-placed officials over here, and that puts her in a position, you know, to advance Russia's interests, I guess, from inside powerful American political organizations. And that's the allegation. And especially when she didn't register as a foreign agent, the right. argument is that this was all covert.
All right. So does Paul Erickson have connections? I mean, is he with her in the room when she's, you know, talking to Alexander Torshin or other people in the Russian government? Like, does he know better?
At some points, yes. I mean, the prosecutors in Butina's case have documents, you know, emails and memos and things like that connecting her to him and vice versa. And so there's a clear indication. And again, they flat out refer to him in some of the documents, again, using this right. moniker, U.S. person one, not his name, but they refer to him as a co-conspirator.
This is all so fascinating, and your work got the attention of national media outlets, and you were interviewed by Rachel Maddow on MSNBC. Tell me a little bit about how that came together.
Well, it was just that, you know, the way I got into covering all this was back in December 2017. The New York Times did a story in which they said they had gotten a hold of an email that somebody had sent back during the presidential campaign in 2016, offering to the Trump campaign to set up a meeting between Trump and Putin. And buried down in that story, they revealed that the person who sent the email was Paul Erickson. And I didn't even see the story at the time, but somebody sent me a tip saying, hey, do you realize this guy's from South Dakota? He's, you know, grew up in South Dakota, been around for decades. And so that's where I decided, well, I got to find out who this guy is and do a profile. And I ran a really long profile on him in February 2018. And then, of course, Butina was arrested and charged in July. He's now been arrested and indicted. So when you go back and look at that profile, that was sort of the first profile to come out during this whole Russia scandal of who Paul Erickson is. And so the Rachel Maddow and so had her producers had emailed me a time or two and about my reporting. And so when the indictment came out, they just emailed and asked if I would come on the show and talk about what I knew about him, and so I did.
Mm. Any other national news outlets that are sort of paying attention to, you know, what's happening right now and moving forward with Paul Erickson and the indictment?
Definitely lots. Yeah, you know, when she was arrested, I also got emails from people from all over wanting me to give out Paul Erickson's phone number and et cetera and that kind of thing. So, you know, when she got charged and of course, given all the interest in the connection, the alleged, you know, connections between the Trump campaign and Russia, it's something that has brought a lot of attention to South Dakota and our connection with Paul Erickson, who grew up in Vermilion and, you know, wanted or unwanted, we've received that focus.
And here's one of the things I find interesting, because when we look back at that reporting that you did in the profile, he has some, you know, wild sort of detours in his life where he's, you know, working as an entertainment agent and other things. Did people who worked with him in Republican circles, did they know that about him? Was that something that sort of came out when your profile came out? Like,
right.
Hey, this is a guy who also did this, this, and this, which is clearly, you know, maybe questioning his judgment, if nothing else.
Everybody seemed to know snippets about him, but not the whole story. Like, you know, he was an entertainment agent for John Wayne Bobbitt immediately after John Wayne Bobbitt, I guess, had his rise to infamy, shall we say.
Right.
about 25 years ago. Yeah. And, you know, that was just one of the crazy, he was an executive producer with Jack Abramoff, who ended up being, one of the most corrupt lobbyists of all time. They produced a movie together in the 80s. And, you know, he was, Erickson helped run one of Pat Buchanan's presidential campaigns. And the list of his sort of just interesting and bizarre experiences goes on and on. And nobody seemed to really know the full story of his life, but people who'd come in contact with him knew pieces of it. And so when you lay out the full extent of it, a lot of people were surprised, certainly, at all the strange places he's been.
What are you looking for next? What do you sort of, what are some of the next steps in this case that you think might reveal more details?
Well, I think everybody who's following this is waiting to see what happens. Is he going to also be charged with conspiracy or anything else in connection with his involvement with Maria Butina? I think that's the next question. I mean, we'll see how the fraud and money laundering case plays out in South Dakota, and that's serious enough. But, you know, since he's named as U.S. Person 1 over and over in the Butina case, that's yet another thing hanging over his head potentially.